It's your life. Live it. Live on AWR SID Media, from broadcast to baptism.
All right, now we are getting into our Chew on That segment, where we are reading the chapter and then getting some insight, some perspective from our pastor. So how we do it, Pastor Akilinda, is that we read the whole chapter and then you give few comments and then we get into the Q&A. Is that all right?
All right, okay. It's no problem.
All right. It reads as follows, and I'm reading it from the New International Version. These are the laws you are to set before them. If you buy a Hebrew servant, he is to serve you for 6 years. But in the seventh year, he shall go free without paying anything. If he comes alone, he is to go free alone. But if he has a wife when he comes, she is to go with him. If his master gives him a wife and she bears him sons or daughters, the woman and her children shall belong to her master, and only the man shall go free. But if the servant declares, I love my master and my wife and children, and do not want to go free, then his master must take him before the judges. He shall take him to the door or the doorpost and pierce his ear with an awl. Then he will be his servant for life. If a man sells his daughter as a servant, she's not to go free as a male servants do. If she does not please the master who has selected her for himself, he must let her be redeemed. He has no right to sell her to foreigners because he has broken faith with her. If he selects her for his son, he must grant her the rights of a daughter. If he marries another woman, he must not deprive the first one of her food, clothing, and marital rights. If he does not provide her with these three things, she's to go free without any payment of money. Anyone who strikes a person with a fatal blow is to be put to death. However, it is not done intentionally, but God lets it happen, they are to flee to a place I will designate. But if anyone schemes and kills someone deliberately, that person is to be taken from my altar and put to death. Anyone who attacks their father or mother is to be put to death. Anyone who kidnaps someone is to be put to death, whether the victim has been sold or is still in a kidnapper's possession. Anyone who curses their father or mother is to be put to death. If people quarrel and one person hits another with a stone or with their fist, and the victim does not die but is confined to bed, the one who struck the blow will not be held liable if the other can get up and walk around outside with a staff. However, the guilty party must pay the injured person for any loss of time and see that the victim is completely healed. Anyone who beats their male or female slave with a rod must be punished if the slave dies as a direct result. But they are not to be punished if the slave recovers after a day or two, since the slave is their property. If people are fighting and hit a pregnant woman and she gives birth prematurely but there is no serious injury, the offender must be fined whatever the woman's husband demands and the court allows. But if there is serious injury, you are to take life for life, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, and bruise for bruise. An owner who hits a male or female slave in the eye and destroys it must let the slave go free to compensate for the eye. And an owner who knocks out the tooth of a male or female slave must let the slave go free to compensate for the tooth. If a bull gores a man or woman to death, the bull is to be stoned to death, and its meat must not be eaten. But the owner of the bull will not be held responsible. If, however, the bull has had the habit of goring and the owner has been warned, but has not kept it penned up and it kills a man or a woman, the bull is to be stoned and its owner also is to be put to death. However, If payment is demanded, the owner may redeem his life by the payment of the whatever is demanded. This law also applies if the bull gores a son or a daughter. If the bull gores a male or female slave, the owner must pay 30 shekels of silver to the master of the slave, and the bull is to be stoned to death. If anyone uncovers a pit or digs one and fails to cover it and an ox or a donkey falls into it, the one who opened the pit must pay the owner for the loss and take the dead animal in exchange. If anyone's bull injures someone else's bull and it dies, the two parties are to sell the live one and divide both the money and the dead animal equally. However, if it was known that the bull had the habit of goring, yet the owner did not keep it penned up, the owner must pay animal for animal and take the dead animal in exchange. May the Lord bless the reading of his word now and forever. Amen. Your comments, Pastor.
Sure. Thank you so much. The book of Exodus 21, we can better understand it when you have the understanding of chapter 20, which I believe we discussed already earlier.
Yes, we have, Pastor.
Sure. So focusing on chapter 21, we find that the laws that God is giving to the Israelites, they are case-based. They are not like the ones in chapter 20. Mm. That's why we find in chapter 21 there is a conditional preposition which is being used always, if, of which they are not applicable to everyone, only to the Israelites. So we find that when God rescues the Israelites from Egypt, he is about to create a community or a society like any other nations. Mm. So in other words, he's coming up with a culture and with his own laws to maintain order.
Yeah.
Like previously, he gives the Ten Commandments, which are to general, to everyone, as long as he's a human being. Mm. But when he comes to chapter 21, it's more like he's coming up with a culture to maintain order in his society like other nations, we find that this time we find the code of Hammurabi and also the Mesopotamia, they also had their own rules.
Indeed.
And also rituals. So in chapter 21, also God now comes up with his own laws,
right,
to govern his society or his community.
Mm.
So now the difference between God's governance and also the other governance that existed at that time is that when we read chapter 21, we find that now God brings in the issue of equality and fairness regardless of social status. So find that everyone is treated equal, unlike other communities, of which now God is making a distinction between other communities and also his, of which now in his community or culture that is about to create or that is creating, he brings in the issue of equality and fairness. Whereby you find that the law, we find that women slaves and also masters.
Pastor, are you still there? Oh. Okay.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you now. You dipped there,
sure,
Pastor.
Thank you.
You were saying women slaves and their masters, and then you got cut. Continue from there, Pastor.
All right, thank you. So now I'll find that also he says if masters own slaves, they're just to work for 6 years, and the seventh one they're supposed to be released, of which it was not there in other communities. Of which now God is showing his character of being the God of the masters and also what of the slaves. Of which the lesson that we draw there is what true justice is impartial and should uphold the dignity and rights of all individuals, regardless of their position in society.
Okay.
So
let's get into the Q&A then, Mfundisi, because we have very little time between you and I. So are you therefore saying God is for slavery?
Pardon?
Are you saying God is in support of slavery. This whole chapter appears to be God regulating slavery.
Not really, because now God, what he's using now is here is accommodation theory, of which that time it was okay. So which
No. I'm talking about God, not with people, with God. Are you saying slavery is okay with God?
No, it's not okay.
Then why is he not abolishing it here?
The thing is that to them, to that time, it was okay.
To God.
That's why
so
now I'm saying
that time it was okay to God. Was it okay to God?
Not to God, but human beings.
Then why did God not stop it? If it was not okay to him, why did he not stop it?
Because it was not a time. I can give an example. When you have a kid, when somebody is 6 months, you cannot say, you usually tell him, say, no, this is mama, mama, mama. But as he's growing, say, this is mom. Of which you cannot force him to say, this is mom, when she cannot speak out. I didn't know anything at that time.
Yeah, these are grown men and women. These were grown men and women. These were not children. They know slavery is good or bad.
Now, religiously, they are child. They were children. Religiously, they were children. They didn't know anything.
No, Funis. So they had the Decalogue at this time. Already, they had the Decalogue. They knew the right, what is right and wrong.
So now, they did. Now there's a difference between. It's just from giving them the Ten Commandments.
So they knew exactly what was wrong. In fact, these are people who came from slavery themselves.
Yes.
They were slaves and God liberated them from slavery. But now they themselves are making people slaves?
Yes, because, get me clear here, I'm saying that time religiously, they were too young.
Then why did God liberate them from this? If slavery was okay, why did God liberate? Why did God liberate them from being slaves? Did God liberate them so they can make other people slaves?
Not really.
Then why? If God didn't like them being slaves, why should other people be slaves?
All right. Okay. So I think maybe you follow me closely here. My point is this: God freed them indeed, yes, and he never wanted anyone to be a slave. Now, at this time, he cannot bring to them shima. This is porridge, if I were to speak from human perspective. So now, from the spiritual point of view, they were still young in Christianity or in religious. So they had to move step by step and step by step. That's why even in Corinthians, Paul, he was telling the Corinthians, he was saying, no, that time when I came, I gave you porridge. And also now, this one... it was this one who came and he gave you what shima. Of which he puts Christianity into phases, of which even in the Old Testament, killing was just okay, like maybe fighting or whatever.
No, Pastor, there is no way you're going to find killing being okay indiscriminately.
I mean fighting battles. I mean battles, other nations with other nations. Also, God came up with what with his nation, whereby you tell them to go to war. But in New Testament, it says no, because now they have matured spiritually.
God doesn't stop warfare in the New Testament, Pastor.
Pardon?
God never stopped warfare in the New Testament.
He did.
Where?
Because now in New Testament, you find that he's saying that we don't battle against what flesh, but what principalities. Of which now he spiritualized it. That's why he says, obey no whatever nation you are, but there is no command for Israel to go and fight with other nations. Love one another as well as yourself, those things.
So you're saying, as far as verse 2 is...
So I'm saying, chapter 21, God is introducing himself to this to the people, to what they know already. Then as time goes on, you find that now he's abolishing everything. He never abolished there and then like...
Sorry, no. Pastor, there is no... You're never going to find it anywhere in your scriptures where God abolishes slavery.
Slavery. He did, because there's where Paul says there's no Greek, Hebrew, or whatever, or we are equal, of which we're supposed to be treated equal.
No, you're not going to find that in the Bible either, Pastor. There's no such thing as equality in the world. When Paul is speaking about no Greek, there's no Greek or Jew or woman, are you therefore saying God is abolishing genders? Because it also says there is no woman nor man. Are you saying God is abolishing genders? We're all the same now, men and women are all the same?
Not really gender.
But that verse speaks of that very same thing, Pastor.
Pardon?
That verse that you're quoting speaks of not only there is no Jew nor Gentile, no slave or free man. It says there's no man nor woman. So that text doesn't speak to abolition of slavery. If it doesn't abolish genders, it doesn't abolish slavery.
Here's the thing. When I say Paul says no Greek whatever, I mean he's trying to bring equality not to gender but to everything, almost everything.
Where do you find that from?
So the thing.
Pastor. Oh, WhatsApp. All right, we're struggling with WhatsApp. Pastor, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
So I'm saying maybe you can define the kind of slavery you're talking about, sort of move together, because maybe we are different from the word slavery.
We're talking about a man being owned by another man.
Okay.
A man being treated this chapter talks of a man who's going to get married. And if he gets married because the master gave him a woman to marry, he will get married and have children. But when he, after 6 years, gets free, he will leave his wife and children. So God is for divorce. This God of chapter 21 is for divorce and fatherlessness, absent fathers.
Not really for divorce, my leader.
What's going to happen, Mfundisi? Because here it says if you marry and your master gave you the wife, you're going to leave your wife and your children with the master. That's regulating fatherlessness, absent fathers, divorce, and men separating, leaving their wives.
All right. Okay. Let me maybe put this point. When you are reading the Old Testament from the beginning, we find that God is establishing his nation, whereby he calls Abraham and he goes on. And now when he is introducing himself to human beings, he does not bring the whole package of who he is, because of where the state or the reason is of his people. For they cannot comprehend him completely, of which he does not abolish everything there and then what they are doing. That's why I said this time around in chapter 21, God, what he is using is what we call accommodation theory, where he comes to where people are in order for them to understand him. He reasons with them. So as he goes, so to them now, to them from Egypt, slavery was just okay, whereby they don't have to raise what a slave.
But how do we say this, Mfundisi?
Listen, just a bit. Then in chapter 21, he says, it's okay, you can have slaves, but after 6 years. So now he's making a difference, and just a bit by bit, he's making a difference, trying to...
Sorry, Mfundisi.
You don't have to read to be slaves. But even if you are a slave, like maybe you're working for someone, but not really slave, as maybe... a punishment like, but a slave whereby someone is working for someone. Not like whereby the like colonial or whatever, but just someone working for someone.
No. It's not that influence at all. It is not just someone working for someone. This is a person who is, according to verse 4, verse 4 says, if his master gives him a wife and she bears him sons or daughters, the woman and her children shall belong to her master. And only the man shall go free. So this man is going to divorce his wife. If not divorce, he's going to abandon his wife and children, according to verse 4.
So that's it. So as I said earlier, I think maybe we missed this point. I said these are case-based laws, of which they're not applicable to everyone.
They are applicable to the nation of Israel.
That's the Israel couch. Yeah. So now that's why I said, here God just using accommodation theory for what people they knew that this is right. Then he does not bring the old package and say, this is wrong. Just bit by bit is moving. Until now, we find that in in the New Testament, the colonial perspective, what maybe someone is taking whatever into captivity, whatever, it's not there, just about waiting for someone, waiting for someone.
Mfundis, there is nowhere where God says slavery is wrong. You're never going to find it in the Bible where God says slavery is wrong. There is nowhere in the Bible where God abolishes slavery. Every text that you find, even in the New Testament, Paul sends Philemon back to the master.
Yes, that is Philemon, and Paul Philemon. And where he says now, now here's the thing. So now when Paul sends Philemon to his master, what does he tell Philip to do? His master.
He says, do not
treat him like what... Like the way the
he doesn't tell him, he doesn't tell him to stop being a slave owner,
because in the actual sense, this Philemon was supposed to be beaten with a lead rod when a slave was done steals for his master, and then the master finds that you're supposed to be beaten with a red rod.
I hear you, Mfundis.
Now Paul says, now don't do that.
Mfundis,
the way Christ forgave us and everything.
But Paul does not, in the New Testament, Paul does not abolish slavery. He simply says, treat the slave well. He doesn't stop it.
That's
nowhere do you find Paul saying slavery is wrong. There is nowhere in the Bible where slavery is abolished. Help me understand
That's why I'm saying it depends with the way you define slavery.
I did explain, Funis, a man being owned by another. Philemon being owned by another man.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That is too general. We find that there's that kind of somewhere whereby someone is just working for someone.
It is not.
But it's not like
we're not talking about. No, Funis, we're not talking about somebody who's just. I work for the SID. I'm not a slave, however. I can marry whomever I want to marry. I can leave whenever I want to leave. And when I leave with my wife and children. In this chapter 21, this verse 4 says, you leave your wife and children behind. You walk away alone. Help me understand there. What exactly is going on there? Why is God regulating divorce, abandonment, fatherlessness? Absent father, why? What are we seeing here? What are we missing here?
Okay, all right, okay. I think we go this way. Here in chapter 21,
right,
I find that slaves were treated brutally, like there was brutality in their treatment.
Right.
Of which now, when God now comes up with his own community, he wants to protect slaves, trying to put a picture whereby we are all human beings, of which now he regulates the treatment on how they are treated by other nations. To my culture, when this happens, I have to do this.
Okay.
If this happens, I have to do this, trying to protect the slaves from the treatment that they used to be treated by Israel or other nations.
Let's go to verse 7.
Of which now, that's what I'm saying, he is abolishing that brutality.
Okay. I get that. I hear you that he's abolishing a level of brutality, but he's not abolishing slavery, correct?
Yes.
Okay, let's go to verse 7. If a man sells his daughter as a servant, she is not to go free as male servants do, full stop. So God here is okay with men selling their children, selling their daughters.
All right. Okay. Chapter 7, verse 7 says, when a man sells his daughter as a slave, she shall not go out as the male slaves do.
Yes.
Maybe you can read also verse 8.
If she does not please the master who has selected her for himself, he must let her be redeemed. He has no right to sell her to foreigners because he has broken faith with her. Full stop. So there, she is never going to be free. According to verse 7, verse 8, she is never going to be free. She is property. She's going to be sold from pillar to post. If it's no longer, I'm no longer happy with this one, I sell it to another one.
All right. Okay. So now, when you look at verse 7, you find that before God brings in these laws to Israel, it tells us there is a way they used to do things which was not okay to God himself. So which now he says, in this situation, when a man sells his daughter as a slave, she shall not go out as a male slaves do.
I understand, Mfundisi. My question is, so God is okay with men? Is God okay with people selling their children?
Pardon?
Is God okay with people, parents, selling their children?
This time around, this is okay with it. That's what I'm saying. If at all you're going to understand what accommodation theory is, then you are going to be okay with the entire chapter.
With respect, Pastor, there is no accommodation theory in the Bible. That's a theological term. It's not a biblical term.
I'm saying, you know, accommodation theory, it is a theory which you use in theology whereby God comes to man's level to reason with man, not man to reason with God, because we cannot comprehend God at all.
Yes.
So which he comes, okay, this is how they understand things. Then he comes to their level to accommodate them. Then later on, he teaches the most things they're supposed to be done until they comprehend him completely.
I agree with you, Mfundisi. That, however, does not have any biblical resonance. That's a theological term that came with those church fathers who are trying to make sense of this. You don't find accommodation theory or its biblical resonance anywhere now, do you?
Yeah. It's not there. So the word accommodation theory is not there in the Bible.
No, even it's the very concept.
It comes out in the text. When you read the text and say, this is not okay. But later on, you find that other texts, they explain more about this previous thing that you have read. Or we say, okay, this time it seems like he's okay with it. But again, as you move on, he's trying to neglect it. What is happening? Oh, this time they were not understanding. So now it's going like that.
Okay, Mfundisi, our time is up. A way to end it there. As you can tell, we are confused as lay people. You need to help us as theologians understand these things from the scriptures. I'm hoping to, when we get into it again, we'll be able to get some more insights. Thank you very much, Mfundisi, for your time. Thank you very much, Mfundisi.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.